for Monday, April 13th. Welcome, everybody. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2974. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2974 requires Legislative Assembly or Secretary of State to hold public hearings throughout state prior to adopting a congressional or legislative reapportionment plan. We heard this measure originally on March 9th. You have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment establishes a practicability standard for conducting 5 public hearings on proposed plan and does not allow ability to or not to conduct hearings to prevent adoption of the redistricting plan. It permits the public hearings on proposed plan to be conducted via video conferences or throughout the state.
I would accept a motion at this moment. And wait, before we accept the motion, we accept the motion and then we'll have you speak. Okay.
So I'm on.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and please excuse us, Representative. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment to House Bill 2974.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved to adopt the -1 amendment to House Bill 2974. Representative Leininger, I understand you're here to speak to this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger, State Representative for House District 38. I just want to express support and appreciation to the committee for working this bill and also for the input that has resulted in the -1 amendment. This amendment will make sure that the process of reporting back out to the community after we've had the 10 public hearings for input on a redistricting process is done in a way that is administratively reasonable and doable, and so the community will get the benefit of a report back out in a way that does not prevent or unduly burden the redistricting process. So thank you very much to all of you and to the administrator of the committee for your support and help with this process.
Hey, is there any discussion from the committee? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recall that in the last redistricting plan that was adopted, the committee did get out and about, I think. I'm wondering about the timing. The legislature has until the 1st of July to pass a redistricting plan, or to have it signed into law, I guess is the way the thing's worded. And then if it's not successful in doing that, the Secretary of State has a period of time, which I think ends on August 15th, if I remember right, to write, in this case, her own plan. Does that allow enough time? If you were to get to that stage, would that allow enough time for these public hearings to be held in a way that would allow the Secretary of State to actually draft a plan and get it in a timely fashion to the Supreme Court?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, thank you for the question. You've hit on exactly the issue that is the genesis of this -1 amendment. The idea is that the -1 amendment enables the hearings to be held through video conferencing if necessary, and that there will be an effort to hold 5 public hearings after the reapportionment plan is proposed, but that if for some reason that is not administratively possible, it's possible to do video conferencing or another way to have that community interaction. So for exactly the reasons you identified, we think that the -1 amendments will be helpful.
And Madam Chair, just a quick comment. My recollection from 2001 is that Bill Bradbury, the Secretary of State, did do public hearings around the state. And of course, we more recently in 2011, the committee, I think it was a joint committee on redistricting, did that as well. So I think this bill would simply memorialize what we already do.
That's right, Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart. This bill is intended to codify a really effective practice that was used in the last redistricting, so everyone has the benefit of that good idea.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, any other questions, comments? No? All right. With that, is there any objection to the dash one amendments? If not, the motion passes. I'd accept a motion. I'd accept another motion if you got it in, yeah?
I got it in, and here it comes. Madam Chair, as I stall, this one?
Oh, sorry.
Right, yeah. I move, Madam Chair, House Bill 2974 to the floor with a due pass as amended just now. Recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 2974 to the floor with a due pass as amended just now recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes and the carrier, Representative Leininger, would you want to carry the bill?
Delighted, thank you.
Fantastic. Close the work session and I will open. Also, we're going to carry over House Bill 3483 till Wednesday, April 15th. And with that,
that was what I came down for.
I will open a public hearing on HJR 31. Erin, could you explain the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HJR 31 proposes an amendment to Oregon Constitution to vest power of impeachment of statewide elected executive branch officials in House representatives and power to try impeachments in the Senate, requires 3/5 majority vote of House representatives to deliver impeachment resolution to Senate and 2/3 majority vote of Senate for conviction, limits judgment to removal from office and disqualification from holding other public office, refers proposed amendment to people for approval or rejection at next regular general election held throughout the state. We have a no revenue impact on the measure. We have not received a fiscal impact statement yet.
And I think Representative Heck and I will be testifying. Well, you're the chair now.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that from
that
the way you
judiciously
left.
Oh boy.
But Representative Heck, we're glad you're here, and since it's your bill, would you like to begin the testimony? Be sure you identify for the record.
Vice Chair Smith Warner, Vice Chair Gilliam, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jody Hack, and I'm the representative for House District 19, which represents South Salem, Almsville, and Turner. I am here today on behalf of House Joint Resolution 31, which serves to provide the state of Oregon with a much needed process for impeachment of the executive branch. In light of recent events, the people of Oregon, my constituents in particular, began to ask some serious questions about accountability. One of those questions was, if needed, could Oregon impeach a member of the executive branch? Currently, Oregon is the only state in the country without a process for impeachment. The need for accountability and transparency in government is always essential. The people of Oregon have lost faith in their government and elected leaders, and it's up to us to ensure future accountability and rebuild trust in their elected leaders. My constituents and yours need to know we take these matters seriously. This resolution is a tool for accountability of the executive branch. It gives Oregonians the ability through the legislative body to hold those in power accountable. This resolution is not a weapon and should never be used as such. It is constructed in a manner that provides for a difficult yet fair process of impeachment if ever needed, and we all hope that is never needed. We must be thoughtful but diligent in creating checks and balances that create accountability. I believe this resolution is thoughtful and serves to join our fellow 49 other states. It will allow Oregonians the opportunity to vote on a constitutional amendment, giving them the opportunity to decide whether or not they want this form of accountability for the executive branch. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Representative. Committee members, I'm going to allow questions from each testifier. Dexter, do you have testimony in addition to being available for consultation?
Mr. Vice Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council, essentially no. I'm just here to answer questions.
We're glad you are. But I'm going to allow questions partly because it will prolong my chairmanship. Any questions? Representative McLean.
Was Representative Hoyle going to testify on this, or is she just there answering questions?
If I allow, she will testify.
I'll wait for her testimony.
Are there other questions for Representative Hack? Representative Nose.
So are there any criteria that you're proposing that we would use to govern whether or not we would engage in the process of impeachment? Forgive me, I haven't studied the bill that closely, so I'm just like, can we engage in it for any reason, or are there certain things that which we're supposed to, you know, limit our desire to impeach somebody for?
Vice Chair Gilliam, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. Representative Nose, yes. If you look to lines 6 and 7 of the bill, you will see that the House is granted the power of impeachment for malfeasance in office, corruption, neglect of duty, or other high crime or misdemeanor. And that language is borrowed from a number of other state constitutional or the federal U.S. Constitution. And it essentially what it means is that it has to be a fairly significant, I'll just characterize it as misstep, that is being alleged. The act of impeachment is essentially it is a political process, so there must be some type of serious misstep that is alleged, but it is essentially a political judgment call, first on the part of the House and then ultimately on the part of the Senate, as to whether impeachment is an appropriate remedy or not.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not a lawyer. So how do we define malfeasance or neglect of duty? Just those two, for example. Like, for example, I may not like the way a certain person in the office decided to go about gathering input for a piece of legislation or contracting for a service, and maybe I even think it's corrupt or bad form, but does it meet the legal definition of malfeasance or neglect of duty?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, as I said, this is a political process ultimately. So these are not truly defined terms. I think high crime or misdemeanor, I think that one probably is, but others are not. And so it is essentially the judgment of three-fifths of the House that particular action is an impeachable offense, and then ultimately the judgment of two-thirds of the Senate.
Another question, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
So, thank you. I understand now that it's a political call. I'm curious why we're the only state in the United States that doesn't have this process. There must be some reason for that, and maybe someone who knows could reveal that to me.
That one I don't have an answer for.
Actually,
I hate to identify yourself.
I'll identify myself for the record.
I just love that.
Good vice chair has filibustered my being able to testify. I am Representative Val Hoyle. I represent West Eugene and Junction City, House District 14.
Representative, when you say you're good vice chair, are you referring to me?
No, I was referring to Representative.
That's what I thought.
My adequate vice chair. members of the committee, I actually think I heard the best explanation of why we're the only state out of 50 that doesn't have the impeachment process by Representative Barnhart. And one of the reasons is we do have a very robust ability, a process for recall and initiative. And so because of that, those are sort of three legs of the stool, and because of the strength of those other two pieces, that's the way Oregon decided to deal with issues, again, through the recall process. First of all, I would like to thank my colleague, Representative Hack, for asking me to join on her in co-sponsoring this resolution. I think it's important, and I think she stated earlier what I feel, which is that this is a tool that we do not currently have. It would apply to all five statewide elected officials. This is not a weapon, and so often we see in politics things that could be used as a weapon, but with a 3/5 and 2/3 majority, I have to tell you, that's a very high bar. But I do think that as we go out and we ask the voters of the state of Oregon to have faith in government, we need every tool that we could use appropriately. It should be a high bar. But if someone does break the law or is corrupt or neglects their duty, then we should have this tool to use. I hope that we never, ever have to use it. But when we looked at the language, some people were concerned that this was overly broad. There were other people that were concerned because there had been other impeachment resolutions that were much more broad. So we went to NCSL and looked at all 49 states at what languages they had, and this is the most standard language. So this isn't something that just was came up with capriciously and it was narrowed down from what it was originally done. I think this is a very good bill. I think it's important that this has bipartisan support. And again, I think it is a useful tool. I do not think it should be used as a weapon, and I hope and pray that it never is used, but I would like this to be sent to the people because I think it's that third leg of the stool that we should be able to have in this state.
Madam Chair, was that your answer to Representative Noce, or was that your testimony?
Yes.
I see. I need to go back to Representative Hack, and Representative Kennemer, I think, had a question of her.
And one comment really quick, too. One thing that I wanted to compliment Dexter on, if that's okay, can I do that?
Yeah.
Sure. And just a point of
reference. If it's okay with Representative Kennemer.
A point of reference,
please,
too.
Go ahead.
We worked with Dexter and myself, also worked with the constitutional law lawyer from Willamette, and we also had some retired Supreme Court judges take a look at this. And they, too, felt that it was appropriate and also fell in line with the other 49 states. And so there were several very highly qualified people, much smarter than I, that worked on this.
Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Vice Chair, whatever.
Adequate
Vice Chair. Thank you for the correction. I think Representative Hatch, you may have given me most of the answer I was looking for. I was wanting to know the origins of the language. It has that sense of being sort of boilerplate-ish, if I may. And so this was taken from some other language and then reviewed by some legal experts. And
yes. And in a lot of conversation, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but in some senses, less is more.
No, it's remarkably brief.
We found ourselves at first, you know, looking at a lot of language, but sometimes that can be difficult. So after consulting with, like I said, some much smarter folks than myself, it was deemed that this was very appropriate and very, you know, in line with what other states had been doing. So, and you can speak to that.
Yes, Vice Chair Gilliam, Representative Kennemer.
I'm sorry, I represented
Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. The primary sources for this language are from Washington and California, the federal constitution, and I think there was some language also loosely connected to the Virginia constitution. But we looked at a pretty good selection of all. We didn't look at all 50 states, but a good selection of constitutions.
Representative McClain, Representative Hoyle has finished her testimony. Is this a good time for your question?
Thank you. she answered my questions, Mr. Chair, so I'm very thankful for the opportunity to compliment her and Representative Hack on their testimony. Very thorough, succinct. They didn't go on and say the same thing or redundant, which is
for doing.
Chair Gilliam, Representative McClain, that's what happens when you put women in charge of something. We get it done. It's succinct. It's effective.
Oh, that was
three taps.
This is some like good Democrat.
Now, before we dismiss this panel, Representative Rayfield.
Thank you for acknowledging me, Chair.
Certainly. I'm not asking for a motion.
It's just a word.
I had a couple questions. When things moved to the Senate and you're looking for a two-thirds, and when they're saying that to try any impeachment, so it seems like a fairly formal process, is there some, and I don't know much about impeachment, and so I was kind of curious if there's some burden of proof, like you have to have, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt that the person engaged in these things, or is it more likely true than not true? What's the standard for that, or the procedure?
Vice Chair Gilliam, Representative Rayfield. Again, I'll just, I will unfortunately have to be redundant. It's a political process. So there is not a standard here, and in fact, one of the things that that I discussed with some of the folks that Representative Hack asked me to work with on this was the need to avoid the formality of things like the code of evidence and a lot of courtroom procedures, because that is available prosecution that is sought in the judicial system. This does not provide for that kind of a remedy. Again, it's process, so there's no burden of proof of unreasonable doubt or more likely than not. It's the judgment of the body, in this case the Senate, two-thirds, that the allegations alleged in the resolution of impeachment as passed by the House occurred or not.
And I would like to add to that, and I'll get right back to you. You've alluded to this, and I'm glad you've repeatedly said it's a political process. Many folks who have, such as myself, coming up in school, when you hear the term impeached, particularly at the federal level about a president, there's an assumption that you have removed the president from office, that impeachment means it's over, and that's not the case. And it's hard, I think, for us to separate the two. It is a very important process, but it is a political process and does not constitute the removal from office, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Vice Chair.
I'd like to say, to comment as well.
Please.
Chair Gilliam and Representative Rayfield, part of the reason in our conversation with this is, and the reason that isn't part of the process is because we're not lawyers. And so to put that burden on folks who are not lawyers would be detrimental to the process.
Follow up, Mr. Representative Rayfield.
Jurors who sit in the courtroom day in and day out are not lawyers, and they you know, are constantly asked to look at reasonable doubt or more likely true than not true, a preponderance of the evidence. And so, you know, folks would be able to understand that. The concern that I would have, and just from a process standpoint, is when you're looking at trying to determine whether something did or did not happen, each individual in this dais is going to have a different standard. Based on the way it's written, I can have a hunch, you know, and be okay, and I could cast a vote on that. If it's more likely true than not true, then I know that it's greater than 50% that I believe that this act did occur. Reasonable doubt ensures the most safety, which is why we use that in our criminal justice system to ensure, because we always take the side of, you know, proving something, the innocence, and so avoiding convicting somebody who's not guilty. So I think while this is, for me personally, I understand that this is what's done in other states, it doesn't mean we can't do it better here in Oregon. And so and write this in a more modern way. I mean, we're using terms in here called high crime. I'm an attorney, and I don't know what the heck a high crime is. It looks to me antiquated language. So I would be interested in kind of modernizing it to have a little bit more understanding, especially if we're going to be sending it to the voters to determine, you know, for them to look at this. So, I mean, have you guys thought about trying to update the language or things like that?
I think, Dexter, you first, and then I'll go.
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Rayfield. Impeachment is a rare act throughout the nation. And so there is, in my view, prudence in using language that parallels that in other states, so that then when this kind of circumstance arises, you can have the collected wisdom of what occurred in other states to call upon as a resource. That would be my response. In terms of high crime, that to me means felony, I think. That, you know, that is of the terms listed here, that probably would be one that could be changed, but I don't necessarily see it as a downside that it's a bit antiquated.
Vice Chair Gilliam, Representative Rayfield, I think certainly we could take a look at updating the language on high crimes and possibly have that listed as felony, although the feedback that we got both from NCSL, from the legal scholars that Representative Hack was working with, was that for something to occur, to have such a high bar that you have 3/5 and 2/3 of each of these bodies vote that someone in one of the executive branch offices should be impeached, that is far different than a political stunt. And I know that we here in the legislature take our jobs very seriously. And as much as we may be different on a partisan level, the fact of the matter is that having this tool is helpful if there is someone in one of those offices that the voters have entrusted in doing a job. If they are not doing that job, and it would harm the state for them to be there, and you don't quite know what that would be. One, having the similar language, as Dexter said, would allow us to look on precedent, because these are, I think someone mentioned, called it a black swan type of event, not something that we see very often. But the fact of the matter is we may at some point need to take action, and we should have the tools at our disposal to do so. I should hope that we never do, but should we need to, allowing us to move more swiftly than a recall petition would allow, I think is important and essential, specifically if that person who is in office would be doing harm to the people of this state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Vice Chair, want to thank you, Representative Hack, for the simplicity of the bill. We're, I fear, getting ready to do something we often do in this body, and that is talk something into a state of complication. And this is as simple as it can be, and that's the beauty of this bill. I think we all understand what it means. It's basically a political document. It will be impossible to become too finite in our description of things. And so with that said, I would just caution the committee into making this far more complicated than it needs to be. It is, as I think I described one of my amendments some months back, this thing is as simple as a screwdriver, and we need to keep it that way, I think. So I would, again, just caution us into making something that's simple and very easily understood into something complicated that needs way too much explanation. Thank
you. Representative Kennemer.
What's the rationale between having different voting standards in the two houses?
You care to respond first? Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Kennemer, the 2/3 vote parallels the U.S. Constitution. It requires 2/3 vote of the U.S. Senate to impeach a president or federal judge. The 3/5 was in part in order to ensure, because these terms like malfeasance in office, neglect of duty, that sort of thing, are not defined, to make sure that it is something that is perceived by more than just a simple majority as a bad act. That's the requirement for 3/5. And then because the actual impeachment conviction results in a loss of office, that is why that's felt to be a higher standard.
Follow up,
please.
In reading this, can it originate in either house?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Kinnemer, no, it must originate in the House.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're all familiar with the impeachment proceedings that have been around in modern times that are pretty famous. There were a couple of U.S. district judges who were impeached for malfeasance in office and removed. I think a couple have resigned in the middle of that process. The impeachment process against Richard Nixon as president was never completed because he resigned before the Senate could hold its trial. There was never a trial, according to my knowledge, my recollection, in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. So the question I have really in this instance is the Senate required after receiving a bill of impeachment from the House to hold a trial and a vote and take a vote on conviction and removal under this provision? Or could the Senate decide not to do that?
Mr. Vice Chair and Representative Barnhart, actually, I too could be wrong, but I believe that the Senate in the Bill Clinton matter actually did conduct a trial. And
my recollection's wrong, yeah.
While I haven't really thought about that, my off the top of my head reaction is that in fact, if there is a resolution of impeachment that is before the Senate must act in some fashion.
An additional comment, if I might.
Please.
I've looked while we've been talking. There are several references that I was able to find to the term high crime and misdemeanor. And of course, it's a constitutional provision that was used in the English Parliament in the 14th century and has followed along since then. And generally speaking, it has meant, and this is something that hasn't been mentioned yet, a crime that only applies to people who are in high positions, hence the term high. And so it has to do with violations of the public trust. Now, that doesn't mean you couldn't be removed if you committed murder, something of that sort, but peculiarly it's designed to deal with violations of the public trust that are done, that can only be done by people in high position. And it is an archaic term, as Representative McLean referred to it, but it does, or I'm sorry, Representative Rayfield, but it does have a long history of interpretation in English common law and in American jurisprudence. And so using a term like this, even though it is archaic, makes sense to me because you can look to other jurisdictions for what it means. You don't have to rely on the fact that we don't have any precedent in Oregon.
Thank you, Representative. You know, I think it would stand to clarify that earlier question only because as I read line 10, of the bill, the Senate shall have the power to try any impeachment received. That, to me, may leave some wiggle room for them to refuse an impeachment received from the House. I could be wrong, but it...
Mr. Vice Chair, I agree with you. I think there could be... You could remove that possibility by changing it to the Senate...
Shall try any impeachment. But having the power makes me wonder. Okay. Representative.
Vice Chair Gilliam, thank you for the question. I actually think that's one of the, that we should not make it too easy. And if something gets sent over from the House and not no one in the Senate or no one in leadership in the Senate thinks that it's appropriate, or there aren't enough votes in the Senate to actually pass an impeachment, you know, to have an impeachment, then maybe it shouldn't be done. I mean, really, this should be done when it is evident to everybody within these bodies, within these two chambers, that the person who the voters elected into a statewide office, into our executive branch, are not capable of doing their job.
And Chair Hoyle, please.
And so I think that the language as it stands is both adequate and appropriate.
And Chair Hoyle, I have no argument. My point was merely for clarification.
Right.
And if that's the intention, so be it.
And
that's all.
Vice Chair Gilliam, I believe that there should be a high bar. I think that the language here is appropriate, and I do think it's a high bar.
Thank you, Representative. Are there other comments or questions for this panel? Before Representative Rayfield, please.
We were, you know, as I keep reading this, I think what kind of has thrown me off is when I read some of the terms that, you know, being a lawyer, there are terms in here that refer to, you know, legal issues. And so it says senators shall swear or affirm to do justice according to law and evidence. And so and I was just briefly chatting with Representative McLean, and as I read that, to me, it's like, well, who administers the proceedings, what evidence comes in, what doesn't come in, because eventually those decisions have to be made. And Representative McLean pointed out and made a really an interesting thing. Is it the Chief Justice who would potentially preside over this to be able to determine these things, or who would preside, and who are going to make these decisions about how the hearing would be held?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Rayfield, the intention here was, in fact, split from what there is in the U.S. Constitution, where the Chief Justice does preside. Here, there would not be a role for the Chief Justice to preside. There would not be, the desire was not to have the formality of getting things admitted into evidence and the kind of complex procedural safeguards that there are in court. That wasn't the desire because, for the same reason that this is principally a political process. And so the Senate president would preside over this and or could alternatively appoint someone. Other than the language which you pointed to, that senators shall swear or affirm to do justice according to law and evidence, which is simply an affirmation that you will exercise, that each senator will exercise their best judgment as they see it, that the procedures are flexible and would allow the body and the Senate President to fashion a particular process when the particular impeachment case arose.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Was there any data about the other 49 states? Representative Barnhart mentioned some impeachments he remembered at the state level. Was there data about how many in past years have been used and in what states? I'm just curious. We obviously don't need to delve into that, but I'm wondering if that's available.
Vice Chair Gilliam, NCSL did have that data. I know that my staff pulled that together, and I did not bring it, nor for the life of me can I remember, but it was very, very few. But we'll get that data to the...
It was very few.
Yes.
Rare that, as you mentioned. Our very able administrators pointed out it was 11 total.
11.
Any other comments or questions for this panel? Before we let them go and the chair comes back, I would entertain a motion to recess. Representative Rayfield.
Yes, Chair Gilliam,
Oh, never mind. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, committee. There will be no recess.
While the chair is returning, we'd like for Aaron Thurber to come forward. Welcome, sir, and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Aaron Thurber, and I live in Brooks, and I represent myself. And I'd like to compliment the previous panel that was testifying here, because I think they did a very fine job and were very comprehensive in their research that they've done. And I want to compliment the members of the committee here on the fine questions that they had regarding this process of impeachment. I want to speak in favor of impeachment. I think that it would go a long ways for improving the public confidence in Oregon government so that we don't have any more fiascos like the Cover Oregon and the DMV computer case that cost us about $250 million a few years ago. And I'd like to comment on the recall laws, which would not be affected by the impeachment process law. Recall laws are fine and work well when issues are small, localized, and everyone knows the people involved, and nearly all are affected by the issues. Recall can be totally political, but I don't think that impeachment is that political because of the high standard that would be required for impeachment of a public official. There have been 5 successful recall campaigns in Oregon in the last 20 years, but the Oregon voters are somewhat apathetic with only about a 40 to 50% turnout. Recalls cost a lot of money and are slow, and this bill will not replace the recall laws. And I can also indicate that most of the recalls have been for judges. The Oregon Blue Book cites 5 referendum efforts for political, well, for judicial reform and discipline of public officials, and each passed with a 10-to-1 or 10-to-2 margin. And I'm sure that this proposal will find wide support among voters. And I would encourage, it would definitely encourage more confidence in Oregon's government. And I urge you to pass this legislation. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for coming here to testify, for taking time. And we appreciate your words and your support. And I'm hoping that we can move this bill. We will not do it today because we do not have the fiscal on the bill, but looking forward to moving it to the floor. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, with that, we will close the public hearing on HJR 31. And with that, there's no further business. We are adjourned. We are adjourned.